Final hour, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, broadcasting live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly BI membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Again, a big thanks to Teron Davenport for joining us for about the first half of the show. He had to get over to St. Thomas Sports Park. Titans coordinators are speaking right now over there, and we're not going to bring that to you live. Usually not a ton comes out of those press conferences, but if there is anything important, we will let you know about it. We'll keep an eye on X. We are recapping the college football weekend. The SEC I thought it was a solid weekend outside of Alabama and Texas. And, you know, Texas was a big loss at Ohio State, and we'll see what the Longhorns can do. Can Arch Manning kind of, you know, figure some things out after what was a lackluster debut in the 2025 season? And then Alabama, we just went through the Kalen DeBoer saga and how long he's going to have. Let's get into some of the local teams here. And we'll start with Tennessee. I think Tennessee looked good on Saturday. That defense, you know, they gave up 26 points, but overall they were opportunistic. Arian Carter was shot out of a cannon on that first sack. They were able to get the ball loose from Steve Angeli. Scoop and score made it 17-zip. And Joey Aguilar, I had questions about him because, you know, in terms of pedigree, Nico Iamaleava was a five-star quarterback who was talked about like he was the savior of this program. And, yeah, last year wasn't very good, but he bolts in spring practice, and it left Tennessee in a tough spot where you either have to go with an unproven guy like Jake Merklinger or George McIntyre, who's a true freshman, or you go into the portal where it was slim pickings at that point in the year. Instead, they basically make a one-for-one trade with UCLA and take Joey Aguilar. And based on the results from Saturday, I think Tennessee got the winning end of that trade.
When Joey Aguilar hit that deep play-action post to Braylon Staley, it was like a breath of fresh air, a drink of cool water to Vols fans, because that's what they missed with Nico Iamaleava last year, who would overthrow, it seems like, everybody. But that's what Josh Heupel, I think, wants to do on offense. Is Joey Aguilar operated the offense at the tempo that Josh Heupel wanted, was able to hit some deep shots, was able to get the ball out of his hands quick. The run game, of course, is going to be there. It just looked exactly what you would hope it would look like. And I think Josh Heupel is going to be able to get the most out of Joey Aguilar.
There were some misses early from Joey Aguilar. Like, there were a couple of throws where I'm like, eh, that's not where it needs to be.
Certainly not perfect.
But you're exactly right. He ran the offense the way Heupel wants it to. And I think that's something that gets lost with this Tennessee system, is talent really doesn't matter all that much. Like, that's kind of what I've taken away from the first, 5 years of the Josh Heupel experience, is Hendon Hooker and Joey Aguilar are less talented quarterbacks than Joe Milton and Nico Iamaleava.
Yep.
Like, when you're looking at just central casting, what do you want from a quarterback? Big, strong arm, athletic. Joe Milton and Nico were exactly that. But Hendon Hooker and Joey Aguilar were smart and knew exactly where the ball needs to go. And it seems like that's what works better for Josh Heupel's offense. You don't need the five-star quarterback. You just got to find a guy who knows how to run that system.
And think about it. Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton both could not win the starting jobs at Virginia Tech and Michigan, respectively. And he gave them a chance in the NFL. And that's what bothers me when so many people say Josh Heupel's offense does not translate to the NFL. Well, for one, it's really early. But two, Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton wouldn't have been drafted if they did not go to Josh Heupel.
Joe Milton would have.
You think Joe Milton still would have?
I mean, you can throw a ball 80 yards in the air, somebody's going to take a chance on you.
Okay. But he soaked every last drop of talent out of them that he possibly could. Joe Milton did not perform like that at Michigan.
I agree.
And it wasn't great, but it was still fine.
When Hendon Hooker got benched at Virginia Tech, I thought we'd never hear from him again. Like, I thought he might go to, like, he grew up in Winston-Salem, I believe, somewhere in North Carolina. I thought he might go to, like, Wake Forest and be an average quarterback for a couple years and then, you know, never play in the NFL. Tennessee turned him into a Heisman candidate, the Heisman favorite at one point. So, you know, I had a lot of questions about Aguilar. I mean, he threw 14 picks in the Sun Belt. Like, it didn't seem like it was going to be the most natural fit. And it wasn't perfect on Saturday. And we don't know how good Syracuse is going to be, but they won 10 games last year. I think that was a huge step in the right direction. And with the talent elsewhere on this Tennessee roster, it makes you think maybe this team could be around the playoff conversation. I don't know if I would put them in the playoff field, but I think the performance from Aguilar takes them from, you know, 20 to 25 back into the teens. And we'll see where it goes from there. Big test coming up against Georgia. And I know Tim on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, wants to talk about that game. Tim, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I'm looking for – I'm a Georgia fan, and it looks like we're going to have two undefeated teams playing on September 13th. So I'm excited about that. I'm going to be there first time – well, not first time. It's been a long time since I've been to Knoxville. And I just wanted to hear what y'all think about that game.
Yeah, Georgia, they didn't give Georgia too many breaks early in the season, not that they need it. And thank you for the call, Tim. Having to go to Knoxville and you play Alabama at home, those are two big games. And if Georgia wants to prove that they are still at the very top of the SEC and the very top of college football, those are games that they have to win. Tennessee, I don't know if they're going to be good enough to compete with a team like Georgia this year.
Georgia has been the lone Achilles heel and Josh Heupel's heel, because right. They've been able to beat Alabama twice. They've beaten Florida twice. He has yet to beat Georgia. The way Tennessee, if they were to win this game, hypothetically, right now I'm leaning strongly towards Georgia, but if they were to win the game, I think it would be the defensive pressure against Georgia's offensive line, who they have a bunch of new guys, not a lot of experience. If they were to win the game, I think that is how they would do it. But as Tim said, I'm leaning towards Georgia right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at this Tennessee schedule. Georgia is the one that you look at and you say, it's the top five team. It is in Knoxville, though, which is always helpful. You don't want to have to go out there to Athens. And outside of that, like, Alabama was one that you look at and you're like, and not Alabama, third Saturday in October, always going to be a tough one. I'll use the cliche. You can throw the records out when those two teams play each other. But Alabama doesn't look like a world beater. And outside of that, you've got Oklahoma and then at Florida late in the season, Vandy. Like, there's a case to be made that Tennessee could win 9 or 10 games this year. And, Aguilar has to stay consistent, but it looked good. They passed the first test, which I think is, we talked about this last week, of can they prove that they can still be an explosive offense with Joey Aguilar at quarterback? And they did. So I'm excited to see what Tennessee does. They'll have ETSU this week, and we mentioned ESPN FPI giving them greater than a 99% chance to win the game. Feel pretty good about that one.
Yeah, so ETSU I'm not worried about, but how will things look for Joey Aguilar translating from week 2 to week 3 against a pretty solid Georgia defense?
Yep.
That is going to be the biggest test, no
right.
doubt.
This is one, like, you don't want to look ahead to Georgia, but your goal against ETSU is to put yourself in the best position against Georgia. So we'll see what Joey Aguilar can do. Chip from Mount Juliet on our text line says, Aguilar is a better talent and motivator than Nico. He needs to get in sync a bit more, but he seems to be more dynamic. I will tell you now, Joey Aguilar is not a better talent than Nico Iamaleava. Like, if you're just looking at quarterback talent and traits, Joey Aguilar doesn't have as many or as good of traits as Nico Iamaleava, but it seems like he does more with less. And quarterback, 90% of playing quarterback is in your head. Like,
it's a good amount of it, that's sure.
If you're looking for the prototypical NFL quarterback prospect, it's Will Levis. Like, Will Levis did exactly what you would want an NFL quarterback to do from the neck down. But if you can't get the head right, that's the issue. And Nico never seemed to be able to do that. And he did not look good against Utah in an absolute stomping.
Yeah.
On Saturday night.
Absolutely. I'd say Aguilar's definitely, he's more experienced, and I would argue that he's probably a little bit, because he's more vocal than Nico was. So I'd say that he does a better job getting the guys motivated to play, and they seem to rally around him right now. But Nico was a 5-star. Joey Aguilar, right. He went to junior college. So
yes, you can easily say, just based on, like, if you're looking for an NFL prospect, that's Nico. And I think Nico, even if he's horrible at UCLA, he'll stick around and he'll probably still get drafted at some point just based off of the reputation. Joey Aguilar is probably not an NFL quarterback, but you don't have to be an NFL quarterback to win in college. We've seen that so many times. Like, Johnny Manziel was never an NFL quarterback. Tim Tebow was never an NFL quarterback. Diego Pavia at Vanderbilt, I would argue that he probably will get drafted, maybe late, or signed as an undrafted free agent. Somebody will give him a chance, but he doesn't have the traits to be an NFL quarterback. But you don't have to be to win in the college. So
right, Nico will get drafted, and if he doesn't perform at UCLA, I could see him being a 6th, 7th round. But he'll get right. drafted based on pedigree. James Williams was a former 5-star, and he got drafted in the 7th round.
Right.
So
that's what draft like the NFL care. It's not quite the NBA, where the NBA only cares about athletic traits, and it's like you could score 3 points a game in college, but if you're 6'7" and can jump out of the gym, they're going to draft you because of the potential. The NFL's not quite to that level, but it's close. It's like they're going to give the guys with the athletic ability a chance because they can mold the other stuff. The guys who are coachable and smart, it's like Xavier Restrepo. Like, at some point, you're just not a good enough athlete to play at that level. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you want to chime in, Dustin from Hopkinsville says, bro, after seeing Arch, I'd take Aguilar over Arch. I like him. Maybe to win one game right now. I mean, I wouldn't say that's completely out of the discussion, but like in terms of long-term potential, yeah, I'm taking Arch Manning. 615-737-1025. Vanderbilt also looked impressive on Saturday night against Charleston Southern. Diego Pavia, I thought, improved on one big aspect of his game. We'll talk about that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you. Had TD on earlier, so if you missed our conversation with Teron Davenport, you can go find it on the podcast. Good stuff with TD, getting ready for Week 1 Titans and Broncos coming up on Sunday. We will be previewing that game all week long here on 102.5 The Game, but it is the Tuesday after Labor Day weekend. We got plenty to get into with college football. I feel like we haven't even really scratched the surface on some big topics. We'll get to all of them coming up in these last couple of segments, but did want to touch on Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt played Charleston Southern on Saturday, so there isn't a whole lot that you can pull from that game. Charleston Southern was a 1-11 FCS team last year, so like it was more about Vanderbilt than it was anything Charleston Southern did. Vandy dominated that game. It was 45-0 until 7 seconds left when Charleston Southern kicked a field goal to avoid the shutout. But Diego Pavia, I thought, improved on one big aspect of his game. And Pavia, we were just talking about how you don't have to be an NFL-type quarterback to have success in college, and Pavia is kind of the perfect example of that. He's not big. He doesn't have the strongest arm, but he makes all the right decisions. But I thought his deep ball looked a lot better on Saturday night. And I don't know how many people out there outside of Vandy fans actually watched that game, but I was up in the booth, and he hit the ball down the sideline to Eli Stowers, dropped it in the bucket. He hit Cedric Alexander in the corner of the end zone for a touchdown. It was a great catch by Seti, but another good throw. He had the one to Richie Hoskins that was called back by a penalty. Like, I thought the deep ball was much improved for Diego Pavia, and that was something that he needed to be better at, being able to push the ball downfield. We saw him do it a couple of times last year. You know, every quarterback's going to throw the deep ball every once in a while, and he hit the one against Alabama on the fourth down. He's done it, but I just thought it was consistently on target on Saturday night, and that's a big development because Diego Pavia, what made him so great last year was the option plays and, you know, being able to keep the defense on its toes, and he'd be accurate in the short to mid-range. If he can add a good deep ball to that, that opens up a lot for this Vandy offense.
Absolutely, and I wasn't majorly in tune with this game because at the same time as Clemson LSU, if I'm just being honest, but I went back and I watched some highlights from Diego Pavia, and it did seem like the deep ball was a lot better. Just looking at the box score, 20 for 25, 275 yards, 3 touchdowns.
And he only played the first half, basically.
Looked good. He looked good.
I thought it was a great start for Vanderbilt. That's one of those games where all you can really do is disappoint. Like, they're really, unless they had beaten Charleston Southern 70-0, like, there's nothing you could do that would be all that encouraging because you're expected to win that game by a lot. But they did what they were expected to do. They did what they had to do. The defense looked good. They made plays. CJ Hurd, the safety transfer from Florida Atlantic, had an interception. You got to see that that defensive line that struggled with injuries last year with, you know, Cordae Sidnor was out. Blanking on the MTSU transfer who had a sack on
I know who you're talking about. I'm blanking on his
number
name
15.
Too.
He had a sack late in the game. They look good. Overall, I thought they looked good. The cornerbacks are improved from last year. I think Vandy did exactly what they needed to do. Now you go into this tough two-game stretch on the road. You go Virginia Tech on Saturday, and then the next week you're playing South Carolina. Those two teams played on Sunday afternoon. And based on what I saw from Virginia Tech, I think Vandy should win this game. And it was funny, the opening line was Virginia Tech by 3. And I'm wondering if that's just that it's in Blacksburg and that's going to give them a little bit of an edge. But that line has dropped, I think, almost to a pick 'em in the last 24 hours. People are hammering Vandy, and I'm with them. Like, I think Vanderbilt's the better team. Obviously, it's a road environment. It's a night game. It's the first home night game in Blacksburg, which always gets more people out there. Because even though Tech lost to South Carolina, there's still some hope for the season at this point. So it's going to be a rocking atmosphere. I think Vandy can handle it. They went into LSU last year, and they struck first against the Tigers. I think that's going to be crucial on Saturday night for Vanderbilt, is you got to punch Tech in the face and get that crowd out of the game. Because when you line it up on paper, I think Vandy is just the better team.
Right. On paper, Vanderbilt has the better roster. But I will say Virginia Tech's defense, I thought, played very well in the first half against South Carolina, very limiting their explosive plays. It's not going to be an easy environment because it's still Lane Stadium, which you know, one of the most underrated environments in college football, I would say. So it's going to be a tough environment for Vandy regardless. But on paper, they should win. We'll just have to see. Does Virginia Tech find a way for their defense to play the entire game instead of just one half? Who knows?
I mean, the punt return in the third quarter by South Carolina ended that game. The Hokies defense was hanging in there, and the offense couldn't score, but that punt return, it cost them. And that was poor coaching again, because they had to punt it again after one of the gunners wasn't lined up on the line of scrimmage, so they had to redo the kick and ended up giving up the touchdown. So, you know, the Hokies were in that game, but I think you saw the limitations that they have, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Vanderbilt, if they can go into Tech and win, you're playing with house money when you go to Columbia next week. Because that's a game no one really would expect Vandy to win. I don't know what the stat is of the last time Vanderbilt won a game in Columbia, but it's been a long time. That's just kind of been their Achilles heel. So you win on Saturday against Virginia Tech. You're 2-0. And you've got games against Georgia State and Utah State at home coming up the next couple weeks. You're playing with house money, and you can go in playing loose against South Carolina, because guess what? You win that game, it's a good chance you're 5-0 heading to Alabama. Like,
oh, yeah, which would be a huge – because look at their next games after Alabama. You have LSU. Granted, that game's at home. Missouri is also at home. And then you're on the road at Texas, and then you have Auburn.
Yeah.
It's a tough five-game stretch for them.
And I don't think Vandy's going to be able to beat South Carolina. I think the Gamecocks, they didn't look phenomenal on Sunday afternoon, but they did more than enough defensively to slow down Tech, and Kyren Drones didn't help himself out. But I thought Lenora Sellers, when he needed to, he made a ton of big plays, including the touchdown deep to Nick Harbor, who Nick Harbor is a freak of nature. That is a big, fast man out there who just burned the secondary, went deep, and that was game over at that point. So I like South Carolina, and I think that's going to be a fun game in a couple of weeks when Vandy heads down to Columbia.
Absolutely. If Nick Harbor puts it all together, it's just a cheat code, because right now he kind of struggles catching the football. Like, he sometimes body catches it.
Right.
If he learns to catch with his hands, it's a first-round pick right there.
Right. That's what we were just talking about with the quarterbacks. It's like these guys who have the raw abilities. It's like the coaches just believe they can teach them to do the little things. Sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. But Nick Harbor is one of those athletes where if they can teach him to be a football player instead of just an athlete, he's going to be a really big problem for SEC defenses. Let's go back to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Eli is on the line wanting to talk Vanderbilt. Eli, what you got for us?
Yeah, hey, I was just wondering, you know, at the beginning of the season, they said the schedule's looking really tough. But now, after seeing how Alabama played and how the other teams are playing, it doesn't look that tough. You know, Vanderbilt came out and really stomped an out-of-conference team, and they're looking like they could be a playoff contender. I'd just like to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Eli. you're right that Vandy's schedule with, I mean, it's one game for Alabama, and I know Alabama fans are going crazy, but that's still a really talented Crimson Tide team. Like, the result on Saturday doesn't really make me think that Alabama's just going to go 6-6 this year. There's still so much talent around that Alabama squad. And who knows, maybe they just bottom out and crater and DeBoer's gone by October.
And we also don't know how good Florida State is. Florida State could be a 6-6 team. We just don't know. So right. We got to see how this plays out, because Florida State could be, again, barely competing for a bowl eligibility.
It's week one, so we can't make sweeping declarations about what teams are going to be. But I do agree with you, Eli, that this schedule, it looks a little bit more doable after what we saw in week one. Like, do I think Vandy could go into Alabama or Texas and win those games? It's unlikely. Like, those are tough places to go play against teams that just load in five stars every single year. LSU looks like they're going to be really good. They come here. But you do look at the other games in the SEC, like Missouri and Nashville. That is a winnable game. You took them to two overtimes, three overtimes in Como last year. Auburn, they look good this week, but you beat them last year, and Diego Pavia's got Hugh Freeze's number. So that one's winnable. Kentucky did not look good on Saturday. And I believe it was Dustin from Hopkinsville said, the boys in blue look dope. You beat Toledo by 8. I didn't watch the game, but I saw some tweets about Zach Calzada not being the guy at quarterback. So
we have so many Kentucky texters. I don't know where they're coming from, but Connor, we have so many.
It might just be Connor with a whole bunch of burner accounts. Vandy, in order to get in the playoff conversation, which I think is a bit of a stretch, I think you got to win 9 games, and that's
minimum
9. Minimum. And it's tough with at Alabama, LSU, at Texas, at Tennessee. That means you've got to win minimum one of those at South Carolina. You got to win 2 of those games. That's a tough task for any team in the SEC. And so I do think Vandy is going to take a step forward this year, but it may not be a 3-win step forward. I think it might be a 1 or 2-win step forward. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Looking at a big weekend of college football to start off the 2025 season. There's a couple more stories we haven't gotten to yet. The big one from last night, Bill Belichick, blown out in his debut. We'll get into some Chapel Bill in the final half hour of the show. And also, Garrett Nussmeier taking the early lead for quarterback one in the 2026 draft. We'll talk about it all in these last couple segments. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly going through a busy weekend of college football. Football season's back. We got 5 straight days of college football punctuated by Bill Belichick's debut last night. Chapel Bill taking on TCU. Before we get into his debut, which was not a good one, Dustin from Hopkinsville texting in. He was telling us how good Kentucky looked, and you know, all I saw was the final score and some tweets from Connor Newt. That is literally all I had to go off of. And they only beat Toledo by 8. But Dustin has asked ChatGPT how Kentucky looked. He said they look good, especially in key areas. Their ground game was potent and decisive. The offensive line played textbook perfect football, and the defense dominated for most of the game. Next up is Ole Miss in a high-stakes home matchup. So I guess we'll see. If Kentucky can play with Ole Miss, I will retract my statement that Kentucky did not look good. But, and I guess, you know, we were taking the Good Morning Football AI saying that that the Titans are going to win the division. So I guess if we're taking one AI, we have to take all of them. So I guess ChatGPT loved the way Kentucky looked in their 8-point win over Toledo on Saturday. Chapel Bill last night. I mean, did you watch the full hour-long pregame that they did before?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
that's all they talked about. It was Bill Belichick.
They flew in the whole game day crew for UNC-TCU, which, you know, most of the time is not a high-stakes primetime game. But it's Bill Belichick's debut, and they had Teddy Bruschi on there. They had Randy Moss on. They were taking selfies with Bill before the game. I saw Michael Jordan was in attendance. Mia Hamm was there. Lawrence Taylor, Julius Peppers, all the North Carolina greats.
Roy Williams was there. All UNC right. Royalty.
Roy Williams was up in the booth with Jordan Hudson. Bill Belichick better be careful. She has a type. But And it started great. It started off perfect for UNC. Gio Lopez going right down the field, touchdown Tar Heels. And I have to admit, I was sitting there on the couch. I was like, man, Bill Belichick, maybe he's legit. Like, I was skeptical about whether he would work at the college football level. And I'm not ready to take a victory lap because it's one game. Again, we can't overreact to 1 week. But they looked absolutely pitiful the rest of that game. 41 unanswered points from TCU. And credit to TCU. That quarterback, Hoover, is it Josh Hoover?
Josh Hoover, baby.
He looked awesome. Like, I'm on the Josh Hoover bandwagon now. But, man, UNC looked horrible. And Gio Lopez, I was surprised it took him as long as they did to bench it. Like, he went 2 hours without completing a pass. 2 hours. Like, just let him throw a screen pass or something just to get the monkey off his back. I saw they kept throwing the time up there. Gio Lopez, his last completion was at 8:12 p.m. Eastern time. He didn't complete another one until close to 10:30.
Yeah. And I think that what spurred him getting benched was he got knocked on the ground, went to the injury tent, but Max Johnson looked so much better when he came in.
Max Johnson came in and went 7 of 8 for 80 yards and a touchdown on the first drive. It's like, all right, why was he not starting the whole time? 48-14 the final. And I mentioned how bad of a weekend it was for Nick Saban. I mean, Saban on Saturday on game day was basically telling Thomas Castellanos how stupid he was and, like, you don't mess with Alabama. Alabama loses by 14. And then yesterday was just talking about how great Bill Belichick is and his development of players and picked him to win the game. And 48-14.
Man, I was telling Connor and Nick yesterday on Weekend Huddle, I'm like, you guys are going to learn about Josh Hoover tonight, because I've been talking about Josh Hoover since last year, and everyone was picking UNC in the pregame. Who was the only one that picked TCU? Desmond Howard?
Yes, Desmond and Pat both picked TCU.
Okay, so they picked TCU, but the rest of them picked UNC. I'm like, guys,
Teddy and Nick both picked UNC.
Guys, you're about to learn about this TCU passing game. Kendall Briles, their offensive coordinator, son of Art Briles. Runs pretty much a similar scheme to what Josh Heupel runs at Tennessee.
Yeah, ran it at Baylor.
And they learned about Josh Hoover last night.
I mean,
just saying.
It was domination in just all aspects of the game. Like, they had the passing game working. They had the 80-yard touchdown run on the first play from scrimmage in the second half. Pick six, scoop and score. That's about as bad as a team could look in week one for UNC. And you're right, like, Josh Hoover, he slides under the radar. The Big 12 in general, I think, just no one really pays all that much attention unless they're playing Colorado. But, like, the Big 12's got some, they got some dudes at quarterback.
They do.
Rocco Becht. I love Robbie was very concerned about Iowa State's game against South Dakota this week. They won 55-70.
He should have been concerned about Kansas State.
Kansas State almost lost
to North Dakota. They had to have a walk-off game-winning touchdown.
Is this true? John on our text line says Gio Lopez is getting $4 million in NIL. That can't be right.
No.
Carson Beck's getting $4 million at Miami.
They're not on the same level.
John, if that is correct, you are 100% in the right saying NIL may be a little bit ridiculous and a bit of a joke. Yeah, Gio Lopez, the game looked too big for him last night. And for UNC, the TCU Twitter account, well done by them.
Phenomenal.
They tweeted out over and over, like, when does the first Hulu episode come out? And their video, I don't know if you guys saw it out there, but go and check it out. It's about a minute and a half long of just all these pundits saying, Bill Belichick could have this team 4-0 heading into the Clemson game. Like, this is a team that could go 10-2 or 11-1, and the schedule is not that tough. You look at the rest of their schedule, Charlotte, Richmond, UCF for the rest of their non-conference games, and then Clemson is the only ranked ACC team they play. They've got Cal, Virginia, Syracuse, Stanford, Wake, Duke, and NC State. Duke might be pretty good. Cal looked good over the weekend against Oregon State. But outside of that, you're not playing a lot of good teams. But I don't think UNC is a very good team.
No, I got to read this tweet from Josh Pate. He said, the TCU football account ate like a death row convict last night.
Yeah. They did. TCU football on X, congratulations. You won the night last night. They usually are one of those schools that does the brain rot video, right? It's them and the Buffalo Bills who always put those just like really stupid "we won" videos out, but they're always kind of funny.
Right.
I didn't see if TCU put one out. I might have to check here in this last
break. They also do the hypnotoad thing.
Yes, yeah. Well, that was part of it. Yeah, the hypnotoad. Ricky says he didn't get benched. He got hurt. Yeah, whatever. I mean, he should have gotten benched before he got hurt because Max Johnson looked better. Max Johnson, I think the tweet of the night was Max Johnson is the same age as Jordan Hudson. And, you know, I don't know if that's dawned on Bill Belichick, but having your starting quarterback being the same age as your girlfriend, interesting. And she was on the sideline at some point last night. Did you see this, Parker?
What, Jordan?
Jordan Hudson. Like, there's a video of her coming up and tapping Bill Belichick on the shoulder while he's coaching the game.
Oh, no, I didn't see
that. You didn't
see this? No.
I saw it this morning. I don't know if it was out there last night, but this morning there's a video, and I hate that I think it was Dov who I saw this from, Dov Kleiman, the aggregator account extraordinaire.
Yep.
But it's a video of Jordan Hudson on the sideline going up and, like, talking to Bill Belichick during the game.
I'm glad I didn't see that.
Yeah,
I just saw her up in the suites with Randy Moss, I think it was.
Yeah, she was with all of, like, the greats.
Yeah.
But, man, it's like Bill Belichick, if he had just ridden off into the sunset, I think we would remember him a lot differently. But now you've got the proof that Brady was more impactful on that dynasty than Belichick, which before Brady left, it was always kind of up in the air. Who deserves more of the credit? Now we know it was Brady because Brady went off and won a title by himself, and Bill Belichick put Matt Patricia and Joe Judge as his offensive coordinators. And then he tries to go to college, and it's been a mess. And I'm not just talking about on the field last night. Like, it's just been a complete circus around him ever since he took that job. And I don't see this ending well. I really don't. And who knows how long this is going to go on. Maybe it's just the 1 year. Maybe it's two. But I don't think Bill Belichick is going to pan out at the college level. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to chime in. Last call for phones. I wanted to talk about the quarterback situation across college football because we've talked about how there are so many quarterbacks out there who could end up being the number one pick next year. A lot of them didn't look good over the weekend, but one of them, I think, stood out above the rest. We'll talk about it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly, next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Final segment on this Tuesday, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Parker Kelly with you. Been a fun show. Teron Davenport with us for the first half. Talked a lot of Titans and lots to recap around college football. Big weekend over Labor Day and a lot to get to. Before we get back into college football, I don't know how we missed this, Parker. Usually the text line alerts us when there's like Titans news that we haven't gotten to. Jordan Schultz reporting the Titans are signing former Cardinals linebacker Kaiser White. White had 137 tackles, 2.5 sacks, and 9 tackles for loss with Arizona last year. So there you go. Kaiser White is going to be added to the linebacker room coming off what was one of his best seasons. He played and started in all 17 games for Arizona last year. Again, 137 tackles, 9 tackles for loss. So we'll see if there's a corresponding move there. I would think maybe it would be Dorian Massey, who they just claimed from the Vikings. I'm trying to think of who else is in that room because they already cut Curtis
Jacobs.
Seems
about right.
Unless you're going to add there and cut from somewhere else, but it looks like Kaiser White going to...
I think that's it because Cody Barton, Cedric Gray, James Williams... Mossy.
They cut Curtis Jacobs, right?
Yes.
So, yeah.
He's on practice squad.
I would guess maybe they weren't sure they were going to get White, and so they brought in Mossy as a, you know, backup plan. But I would guess that's a corresponding move. Maybe they pull from another room, and maybe a cornerback or something like that ends up getting cut. So, Kaiser White, according to Jordan Schultz, will be signed to the Titans. More roster churning at linebacker, but a guy with experience that, you know, if Cedric Gray or James Williams don't continue to develop, you've got a guy with some experience out there. Did want to get to some thoughts on the quarterbacks. And Parker, in February and March, all of the comments on our text line when the Titans had the number one overall pick was trade the pick and take Arch Manning first overall next year. Or trade the pick and take X player first overall next year. And this is why you don't do that, because you had a quarterback who the league thought was worthy of the number one pick. You take him. You look at the guys who were in the conversation this year, and it wasn't a great weekend. I mean, we've already discussed Arch Manning having a rough start to his year. He looked lost out there for three quarters. He started to make some plays down the stretch, but then he still missed a couple of easy throws on that last drive that could have kept the game alive for Texas. Garrett Nussmeier, I thought, looked good. I think he was the only one. Sellers looked fine, too. I would say Nussmeier and Sellers came out winners from this week.
Absolutely.
Klubnik didn't look good. Aller, it was against Nevada, so it's like, I don't know how much you can really pull from that. But I think if you're looking for a winner of the weekend, I think Garrett Nussmeier might have made himself some money this weekend, doing it against what was supposed to be one of the top defenses in football with two top 10 picks on the defensive line. I get it. They only put up 17 points. It's not like he lit them up, but I thought he played within the offense. I thought he played well, and I think he's put himself as the front runner to be quarterback one in 2026.
Didn't turn the ball over, which is what he struggled with last year. But the whole thing about Arch Manning, if how he played against Ohio State, which I will say is the best defense he will play all year, bar none.
Yeah.
If that is any indication, his performance against Ohio State is any indication of how this season will go for him, he's coming back to school. He's not declaring for the draft.
Yeah.
So I think we just need to just wait on that. Like, he may not even enter. So Drew Aller, on the other hand, is very interesting because he's a guy that has all the traits that you're looking for, like we were just talking about with Will Levis. The thing about Drew Aller is I don't think NFL scouts like the fact that he is sometimes timid with the football, not taking chances when he needs to. I think that's why they like Garrett Nussmeier so much, because he's not afraid to rip it in there, but he throws picks. So Drew Aller does not. So that's kind of the discussion around those two.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a big group up there among guys who have the potential to be first-round picks, but nobody has pulled head and shoulders ahead. And I think Nussmeier is probably about as close is probably the number one guy. Sellers, I think Sellers is the guy that NFL teams are hoping has a big year, because he's got all the physical tools, like big, fast, strong arm. If he has a really productive year with South Carolina, and he didn't light it up on Sunday, but he did what he needed to do to win the game. I think if he has a big year, he's the guy who teams will fall in love with and take early. But Nussmeier might be the safer pick. I mean, son of a coach, and I think Sellers, you're going more off of the potential than you are the production. But if Sellers has the production this year, I think he's going to be the number one pick.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think a sleeper that we're not talking about enough is Rocco Becht. I think Rocco Becht has a legit NFL future. Just watching how he played in Farmageddon in Dublin, he was an X factor for them. The box score may not show that because he completed, I think, 50% of his passes. But when a big play needed to be made, he made it, and he's been doing that consistently. So I think we should be talking about Rocco Becht a lot, too.
That's a good point. And Jay from Laverne on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, points out Michigan's quarterback, Bryce Underwood, looked good. Go blue. It was against New Mexico. Was that Michigan played?
Yeah, and he's a true freshman.
He's got a while. But, yeah, if you're looking ahead past the 2026 draft class, 2027, I think you're looking at DJ Lagway and probably Arch Manning.
That's what I think.
I would think those are probably the two guys at the top of that draft. Maybe a guy like Julian Sayin, if Sayin proves he can be.
He will be eligible.
Next year. Yeah. Not 2026, but 2027. Right. But yeah, 2028, if you're looking all that far ahead at the quarterback drafts, I think Bryce Underwood might end up being the guy that teams are tanking for. What's a good one? Go under the win total for Underwood. Something like that.
Yeah.
coming up
with the slogan,
yeah,
tank
already.
For Tua. Do you
tank
remember when
Tua,
that was a thing?
Suck for the Duck was my favorite one with Marcus.
There was one for Burrow. Bus for Burrow? Was that?
Yeah, I think so. There's always good ones. Go under for Underwood. That might end up being what it is in a couple of years. So he looked good. I think for 2026, I think Nussmeier's got the early lead. I think Sellers would probably be my next pick, though. And Sellers is going to have some opportunities this year to prove it in prime time that he can go be the guy. Again, he's what, 6'5" and jacked and
240
fast
pounds
and can throw can make all the throws. If he goes out and has, he doesn't have to win the Heisman, but just like be in the conversation late, I think whoever is at the top of the NFL draft is going to fall in love with the potential. He's kind of what people hope Anthony Richardson could have been, I think.
Yeah, like, but the difference is you're hoping that Lenore Sellers has a lot more experience under his belt than Anthony Richardson.
Like, Sellers will have two full seasons of college football under his belt at that point. Richardson was more of your project guy. Sellers maybe could be a plug-and-play guy. If, again, he's got to put up the production. So,
do you remember that play he had? I think it was on 3rd and 13 where he rushed for the first down, but he broke a tackle from Virginia Tech's defensive tackle.
Yeah.
Then broke a tackle from one of the outside backers.
Yeah, Caleb Woodson.
And then shook off a corner. And I'm just like, man, the strength on that guy?
Right.
Unbelievable.
It's like you need two guys to come get him. And that it was frustrating because, you know, watching the game as a Virginia Tech fan, I'm like, man, we're not playing horrible. But the difference was the quarterbacks. When Sellers needed to make a play, he made a play. Drones didn't. And so we'll see what Sellers looks like the rest of the year, but it was a good start. Jay from Laverne also mentions Carson Beck. Like, don't forget about Carson Beck. I don't think he's a first-round pick. I think that ship may have sailed, but I do think people are going to take a chance on him, the raw talent, and maybe he ends up being that second or third-round pick. I know I went through this with Corey Curtis last week about how taking quarterbacks with the second or third-round pick is just pointless. But,
right.
You know, teams do it every year, and it'll continue to happen. Taylor says sell for Sellers. That's a good one for this year.
Sell for Sellers. Sell for Sellers. I like that.
It's going to be fun to watch these quarterbacks because it is a rare year where it's a good quarterback class. You just don't know who's the best of them. And it will probably fluctuate throughout the year based on how these guys play. But right now, Sellers, Nussmeier trending up, and Manning, Klubnik trending down after week one. It was a great first weekend of college football. We got some fun games coming up this upcoming weekend. NFL is back in 2 days. Cowboys, Eagles on Thursday night. Tomorrow, Corey Curtis going to be with us for the full show. We will go through all of that and much more as the Titans get ready to take on the Denver Broncos on Sunday. Big thanks to Teron Davenport for joining us for the first half of the show. For Parker Kelly, I am Jake Lyman signing off. Chase and Big Joe are coming up next. You're on 102.5 The Game.